Cooperative forms of economy have existed throughout human history as people have come together to build, grow food, and make their necessary means of survival. The Industrial Revolution and the rise of capitalism in the 19th century created new forms of organization based on private ownership, wage labor, and the production for sale on the market. In response to the inequalities arising from this new form of economic organization, communities began to organize cooperatives. The need for such organizations continues today as Canada celebrates National Co-op Week. Joining me in the studio today are Brendan Reimer of the Canadian Community Economic Development Network and Vera Gussert, Executive Director of the Manitoba Co-op Association. Thanks for coming today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
There are many different kinds of co-ops, including worker co-ops, consumer co-ops, credit unions, and co-ops can vary a lot in size. Vera, can you just maybe outline for me what some of the key features that co-ops have in common are?
For sure. I mean, at the foundation of all co-ops is that they are member-owned and democratically controlled. And that's really what stays amongst all the different types of co-ops. That is what makes them unique from other forms of enterprise. They're basically created by their members to provide a service to said members or goods and services to those members. So, I mean, that's really the key fundamental piece. With the democracy based on one member, one vote, as opposed to how much money you have invested gains you power. They're all members are treated equally.
And can you maybe describe a little bit some of the differences between, I think that one of the main differences that I see in different types of co-ops is the difference between the worker co-ops and the consumer co-ops. Do they serve different roles in our society?
Well, certainly. I mean, the different kinds of cooperatives really are defined by the type of co-op they are, right? So a worker co-op, the members of a worker co-op are the workers or the employees, whereas the members of a consumer co-op are consumers who are purchasing goods and services from the co-op. In a housing co-op, the main member of the housing co-op would be households who are gaining housing from the co-op. So based on the type of co-op that it is, it becomes more or less essential to a person's being, whether it's having a roof over your head, whether it's having a job to go to, whether or not it's just the purchase of products, goods, and services, and depending how essential those are to you, it can define how important the co-op is to you, too.
One of the things in the prairies that I think really defines the history of co-ops is the farmer co-ops mm-hmm. that started here. It's such an integral part of our Western Canadian history. And, farmer co-ops, a lot of it did start in response to the power of monopoly capital, the railways and the equipment companies. I was wondering if you could comment about whether that role is still necessary. And I think particularly in response to, the government's now saying the Canadian Wheat Board taking those rights of organization for farmers away. Do you think that role for farmers is going to be continuing and maybe strengthened in the present period?
Well, it's interesting looking at the history of farmer and rural agricultural co-ops. They were the first kinds of co-ops we did see on the prairies, and it was really organizations of farmers purchasing farming equipment, selling their products, and that was really what created our first co-ops. And certainly some of the most prominent in our history, of course, were the wheat pools, which have demutualized and are no longer co-ops through a whole series of events that happened. And now with the Canadian Wheat Board and the situation that they're facing, apparently as early as tomorrow now, I will be interested to watch what happens in terms of some of these farmers organizing themselves again into forming co-ops, because again, it's exactly as you said, it was around the concentration of power and where the power lay, and they felt disempowered when they first started these co-ops. And I suspect that might be happening again if they don't have the ability to collectively market. So it will be interesting to see what happens. But also interesting is that those early farmers who started those rural co-ops, they were the ones who started our early credit unions. It wasn't long after that they started these co-ops. They needed access to capital, essentially, so that they could expand their farming businesses. But nobody was willing to lend them any money. So they just decided to do it amongst themselves. And that's what created the credit union system on the prairies. And the credit union system on the prairies is amongst the strongest credit union system, I would say even in the world, certainly. It's a very strong system, and it's at its foundation was, and its creation was, its ability to lend money to those who could not access any other forms. So it's quite neat how closely they are linked.
I want to bring Brendan, bring you into the conversation here a bit. Last Saturday, cities across Canada, and including here in Winnipeg, joined the Occupy Wall Street movement. And they were staging protests against inequality brought about by neoliberalism over the last few decades. The gap between rich and poor is continuing to increase since the economic downturn. What role do you see cooperatives having in reducing this gap?
Well, I think there's a couple of pieces to it. Part of it is structural, and part of it is based on values. Vera can talk a bit more about the co-op principles, but the co-op community around the world does adhere to a set of principles that govern the way that cooperatives are both structured and operate, which I think address some of the questions that people have in this growing global protest. But even in the structure of it, if part of the concern is how democratic our economy is or is not currently, certainly the co-op structure itself inherently as a democratic economic institution addresses a lot of those pieces. And if part of the concern is the distribution of wealth, again, inherently the structure of a cooperative distributes wealth amongst its members equitably, and so it deals with that. The other piece of it too, I think, is that co-ops are rooted locally. And a big part of the frustration that people are having with our economy is, along with the concentration of capital and power, is the distance of the accumulation of wealth and the distance of the power. It isn't rooted in local communities anymore. Cooperatives, by their nature, are rooted in local communities, serving those communities. So decisions taken about those institutions are going to take into consideration the well-being of that community, which in our current economy, it doesn't happen so much anymore. Decisions are made by people in faraway places who are not considering the well-being of the local community.
Some cooperatives, though, you know, they're owned by their members, but you know, when you go into a lot of co-op stores, you don't necessarily see yourself as really seeing the store itself as reflecting any particular progressive values. The same products that are on sale in a lot of other stores, you know. And I think particularly of the federated co-op grocery stores was recently criticized by Greenpeace as having some of the least sustainable seafood policies of any major grocery chain in Canada. And I was just wondering if, you know, this reduces the argument that co-ops are a more responsible form of organization.
Well, my first response to that would be that there's different kinds of responsibility. And there's different kinds of concerns that people are starting to have about the well-being of our economy, the fairness of our economy, and the fairness and health of our communities. So one piece of it, even with a, let's say, a petroleum cooperative here based in Winnipeg, if it's going to turn $70 million in profits in a given year, it's going to be sharing that with what is now over 200,000 members in Winnipeg. So that profit is not leaving our province. That profit isn't going into one person's pocket or a few people's pockets. It's being distributed amongst the households of Winnipeg. And that structurally is already addressing a lot of the concerns that people are having with the way our economy is shaped and formed. Now, beyond that, it still is about human beings inside a legal structure. Inherently, it still is a legal structure, and it still is people, and it still is members deciding about the other kinds of values that get built into that. So those are pieces that are not inherent in the legal structure, but depend on how that cooperative will live out different kinds of values. So that, to me, would be a starting point, but I'm sure Vera has opinions on this too.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think that certainly everything that you said bodes true as well, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to the membership. If the membership wants to influence a change within their organization, they have ability to do so. And I think a key example of that would be the process undertaken by one of the local credit unions back in the 90s, when it totally changed its vision and its take on how it was going to conduct its business. And it did that through membership. And it was a key, like a group of members decided that they were going to change over the board and change over the vision of the organization. And they did so successfully. So, you know, we have the ability to do it. If it's something that we really want to see changed, we as members have an ability to change that. It's a democracy at the end of the day. So we're only as good as engaged we want to be.
That was actually what I was just going to ask you about, is examples of where people have taken control and made a more progressive co-op out of that. And I think the Assiniboine example that you gave is excellent in that regard. One of the other issues that I've seen in the news this week is that some of Canada's largest credit unions are looking at mergers, and we've seen a lot of mergers of credit unions here in Manitoba as well. And I was wondering if there's a trade-off here. You know, some people really turn to co-ops because of that local personal service that they get, but at the same time, economies of scale are sometimes necessary. And what do you see as being some of the trade-offs there?
Well, I think you named a critical one, which is the economies of scale piece, right? In order to do more and have more influence and impact in our communities, you need to be of a size that enables you to do that. That being said, it is important to build in, regardless of how large a co-op will get, and they could get, I mean, Mountain Equipment Co-op is an excellent example of an extremely large co-op, but if you build in regional mechanisms, if you build in local democracy and the ability to do that, I think it helps maintain that connectivity to local communities. I'm not saying that that's easy. And I don't know that the cooperative and credit union movements have totally figured out the best way to do that yet. But it's something that they are aware of. And if the membership deem it important, they will continue to look into this and figure out a way to engage members. I mean, I think when you look at credit unions or cooperatives and you go to annual meetings, I mean, the attendance of members and the engagement of members typically is quite low in Western economies, you know, in Canada specifically. If we choose to be engaged, we can make an impact, right? But we have to choose to be engaged. I mean, that's, and you know, I had the opportunity to go abroad and I worked with credit unions in West Africa, and there the credit union system, I mean, they get like 95% turnout at their AGMs. Their members are engaged because it is essential to their well-being, and they really see it as a movement and a way to impact change. So if we decide to get engaged, we can make a huge impact.
You touched on an interesting conversation there, and whether the co-ops in our economy are a movement or whether they're a sector. And that's a conversation that you can go around and around with. But just touching on some of the ways to structure democracy, I mean, one of the things that you do see in the co-op sector are federations. So Federated Co-op or the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation or Co-op Housing Federation of Canada, it's a collection of cooperatives in a certain either structure or field, and so they will form a co-op together to have that strength in terms of a strong voice while still being autonomous cooperatives as members that are rooted in their local communities. So that's not quite what you were talking about in the terms of mergers and when scale is within one cooperative, because you do lose some of that grassroots day-to-day communication with members and communities, perhaps, if you don't pay attention to it. But there are other ways to build structures that do accomplish some components of scale while retaining local autonomy and voice.
And finally, I just had one question, maybe Vera, if you have some thoughts on it. What do you see as being the future for cooperatives in Manitoba and Canada?
There's a big question. Well, I think that, you know, there's a growing awareness of what's happening in our economy. I mean, it's just we're more aware because of the failures that have happened. Folks in the public are more aware. And I think that bodes well for cooperatives because, you know, we've sort of been the unheard of sort of alternative, if you will. And I don't like to call us an alternative because I think that we're mainstream. We're there, you know. We can participate, and we are a good mechanism to work within the structures that currently exist. So I think there's a huge growth opportunity for cooperatives and for people to become engaged in their cooperatives, even the existing co-ops. It would be great if we had better, you know, engagement, if members were coming out and being active in their co-ops, and you know, that would be a positive change, I think, too. And then the other thing that's happening in response to the Wall Street, the Occupying Wall Street movements, is around the transfer of wealth from banks to credit unions or locally owned banks in the United States. And certainly we'd love to see that happen here in Canada, too, where we move our money out of, you know, mainstream banks, national banks, and move it into credit unions. And they've actually set a date for that, and there's a huge Facebook movement around it, and it's November the 5th is Bank Transfer Day. So, you know, if we can really make a statement to these large, you know, capitalist organizations saying that, you know, this is not how we want to operate anymore, and there's a huge movement towards a democratically owned financial institution, I think it would make huge impact to those who make policy in this country as well. So I don't know if you want to add, Brendan.
Yeah, I agree. I think people are paying more and more attention to the values of our economy and the values of their purchasing. And if I would have one message to the people who are participating in Occupy Wall Street or other kinds of protests around the structures we have, is take a look at our own personal shopping, our own business, where we do our financial transactions, where we buy our food, where we buy our fuel, and on, and shift our purchasing. And it doesn't have to be all of it, but if all of us would shift our purchasing and shift our economy towards a cooperative economy, I think it would have huge ripple effects on a lot of the things that people are really concerned about in the way that's currently structured.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today, both of you, and I really look forward to Financial Transfer Day. That's November 5th, you said?
Yeah, by November 5th, everybody should move their banking.
Thanks so much. I've been speaking with Brendan Reimer of the Canadian Community Economic Development Network and Vera Gussert, Executive Director of the Manitoba Co-op Association. Happy Co-op Week.